Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, and that's a little bit of the Chico Mendoza Mambo. Chico Mendoza, courtesy of your little YouTube video action live performance of him. But here's the thing. My name is Eric Citizen Payne. Welcome to the K Thompson Live Show. Sorry we had a little trouble getting connected on. And here's the host, the main host, Lady of the Hour. Your name is
K Thompson, and this is K Thompson Live, and you are.
Okay. As I said, I'm Eric Citizen Payne, but I'll say it again. And we have with us also our co-host, I believe, Mr. Legendary Newscaster, Mr. Wayne Gilman. How are you, Mr. Gilman? Is that you, Mr. Wayne Gilman? Hold on. I think I pressed the wrong button on this computer age thing. All right, Wayne Gilman. Oh, I think I did it again on this computer thing. Let's see one time. Or is there a 718 caller with us? Let's see who you are, caller. I think I might have your mic working now. That might
testing.
Be. All right, click on. Yeah, there you go.
Can you hear me?
Sorry about that. Yes,
not
we
a can
hear
you
now.
Now.
Yes,
you can.
We can hear you now.
Very good, very good. Good evening to all.
Hi, Wayne.
I was
how
concerned
are you?
I guess all right. I was concerned. I mean, it was such a long window. I thought I'd dial the wrong number, you know.
We were having a little trouble logging into the show, so sorry to we apologize to you and to everybody else out there, Wayne.
No problem.
Okay.
Go ahead. I can't hear you.
I was looking, Wayne, at the area code, and I know usually someone's on a different area code, so you fooled me there, but that's okay. You know, there's lots to talk about. We want to start up, and welcome to you, by the way, our co-host.
Thank you.
And also, we're going to be talking to Glenda Taylor later on during the show, and hopefully we're going to be talking to the congressman. Right?
Possibly, right?
Yeah, possibly. So we have a full house, a full show today. So, Wayne, what's going on? Did you see this Obama, the State of the Union address in Washington, D.C.?
I got a chance to, you know, what was so funny about it, when I had a chance to come in to hear it, I was traveling from Brooklyn where I was having a meeting with a friend of mine, and I came up this way, and when I tuned in, it was just as he was giving his joke about how he had won the last two elections, you know? So I didn't understand it, basically in what context it was meant until after the speech was given. But it was strong, and he was very relaxed. And, basically I tell people all the time that this is a blessing what we've had the last, 6 years. And it's hard to believe two more years to go. And I don't know what's coming next, but, you know, I just hope that the country stays on the up and up with regard to what has happened, because we came through a storm. I challenge anybody to question that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad to hear him. You know, he was strong last night. He was talking about so many different issues that the people are concerned about, the middle class, the economy. Everything is on the upbeat. His numbers are up. The fact that he has a higher approval rating than he had before.
Right. He had there are a lot of good things going on. I'm sure you're paying attention to those numbers too. Well, you know, the funny thing, and you said you didn't get a chance to see the speech, and I think while I was watching, the reference was to the president making a point in the speech where he said, you know, I can't run again, and you know, he's getting ready to continue on. Somebody started to applaud.
Yeah.
And being kind of, was a Republican, obviously kind of being a wise Weisenheimer.
Right.
And then he said, and then people kind of laughed, and the president said, yeah, I know, because I won both elections. So he had a great, and everybody kind of, you know, it was his one-upmanship of the person, and everybody kind of really responded to that part of the speech. So it was really kind of good. I did get to a number of speeches, but, you know, as you know, the numbers don't lie. So, you know, everything is on the upswing. So the Republicans really don't have much but just to be a bunch of haters and just to show how prejudiced they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, even their response was weak last night. You know, I mean, what can they, you know, they're trying to level the playing field that has been so unlevel for so long. And I really don't know what's going to happen for the 2016 contest, because that side of the fence has not really been decided. But, you know, if Hillary is going to be the odds-on favorite to run, you know, we should really start galvanizing and you know, reinforcing our weak spots at this point, so that there'll be no problems, because this should be a smooth transition. I mean, the Republicans have clearly had their you know, agenda laid out for a long time now, and I'm afraid that there'll be some acts of aggression if they get back in. That's just my myopic opinion.
Please, I completely
forgive,
you know, agree with you. But, you know,
if they get back in as president in the presidency?
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see the Democrats hold the White House again. You know, I'm afraid that a lot of the programs, I'm not saying that everything is perfect. I mean, I bellyache like everyone else when it comes to coughing up the money for the health care insurance. But, you know, I'd rather have it than not. You know, I know what it's like not to have. And, you know, you work X amount of years, you pay into a union, and then all of a sudden, after so many years, when you really need their backing, and they turn around and tell you, oh, well, you know, you're not on the air anymore, and yada, 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 and you got to wait till you're 66 to come back and revisit this whole issue of health care. I mean, it's a very, you know, I don't want to, you know, take a moment to knock after, but, I mean, the bottom line is that this is applicable to a lot of different situations because of health care.
You're talking about after. Now, what is after? People don't know.
Yeah, you know, no, it's just that there were so many changes about the time that I started to take retirement. But AFTER was not alone. There were a whole bunch of different unions that, you know, unfortunately, you know, felt the bite of the economy and just started to shore up its ranks. You know, I mean, it's not a perfect world. I'm aware of that. But you worked so long, so hard. Your health is really in your favor when you're young. And when you really need it, you know, to hear that it's not going to be there for you after paying into it for so long, it's very numbing and suppressing, you know. I mean, and thank God we have mandatory health insurance. It's not like Canada. It's not like Switzerland. It's not, you know, even some Caribbean countries. But at least we're on the road to trying to make it affordable for everybody.
And
I think
also,
that's the key thing right now.
And also, we should talk about the whole educational issue. You know, the educational.
Yeah, that too.
You know, people have been made very much aware of the fact that, you know, minority children, you know, and other children are, you know, they're way behind some other communities. And, for instance, I know that New York State, we were listening to Cuomo the other day, and he was saying that he's been putting more funds into, you know, the educational program. Why they didn't do it before, I don't know. However, the police department, the relationships with the police department and the communities, it's about time that that's really seriously dealt with. You know, so we expect, you know, different things from that, different new things, better things. The fact that more African Americans and Latinos are in jail for minor crimes than white, you know, is disgraceful, you know, and also it's just we hope that things will be changed for the better. And of course it is. The economy is better. They're going to be dealing with police department issues with the communities, and that's on the beat. And especially Cuba. That's interesting also. About time.
Right, right. I agree. I tell you, the one thing that really got to me, getting back to the police and not to dwell on the subject, but I think New Yorkers are beginning to see now that this whole rift between de Blasio and Patrick Lynch was more an orchestration on the Police Benevolent Association's, you know, take on what happened in Ferguson and in Staten Island and in Brooklyn. You know, the whole thing is that Pat Lynch, who runs the PBA, along with his cut buddy, Rudolph Giuliani, the former mayor, had this agenda, you know, basically to embarrass de Blasio. And much to the mayor, the incumbent mayor's credit, you know, he was able to weather the storm. He, you know, basically overlooked what was being said about him, did not stay, you know, cower in the face of adversity, people criticizing him publicly and forcing him to apologize, because, you know, he understood it. He has a son and understands the challenges that he would face in a society that we exist in today where racism is still prevalent. So the bottom line is, a poll was taken by the Daily News, and I think even the New York Post recently conducted its own poll, and it showed that a lot of New Yorkers favored what de Blasio was doing. And again, I go back, you know, I said this some weeks ago, Rudolph Giuliani never apologized for anything. Never apologized for Amadou Diallo, never apologized for Eleanor Bumpers, all those cases during his era.
Yeah.
You know, why must this mayor apologize now?
Yeah, we could go on and on about that. You know, but now that I think the whole trend of the police department has to change in this country because of the fact that there's so many different facets of it that is racist. If you look at the numbers of black police persons versus white police persons, it's almost like and what's happening is almost like, you know, they want to turn things completely around, you know, and have the African-Americans and the Latinos and, you know, our friends of the Caribbean beholden to the police department. And we all know how dangerous that can be. If you look at Ferguson, you see. And by the way, I think there's something else coming out about Ferguson because they did an investigation.
Oh, the FBI cleared the cop.
Yeah. They cleared the cop? Then they're looking for more demonstrations. They are looking for more demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It's sad. It's just the world we live in. And it's not it's not to say that we should be surprised, but, you know, it is sad that it comes down to this.
You know, another thing that I'm very interested in, too, is care for the veteran care. They're finally, you know, I think, cleaning that up and getting that together because that's the problem that happens to the veterans. And if you go to these veteran hospitals, you know, they are not to be believed. I remember going into one where one of my uncles was there. And, you know, it was awful then, and a lot of them have not improved that much in my estimation. So, and then I had a cousin who used to work for the Veterans Hospital, so we found out a lot of information about that. But we really need to get on that, you know, and support the veterans, and not only that, support the troops. You know, we have some dangers, you know, in this world, joking about those strange people who like to kill people, you know. We have to really take a stand, you know, the troops have to take a stand, and under the Obama administration, that's exactly what he's going to do.
Well, I tell you, he's got two more years left, and it's just important that he, you know, follows through with all of his agenda and not, you know, feel threatened by the other party, and that's it.
And also, too, we have our guest that's going to be part of our guest that's coming up on the show, I believe is called Glenda Taylor. And we have you on the line, Glenda, say hello. And before, hold on, now try and say hello. I think you should be able to.
Glenda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Let me tell you
who Glenda Taylor is.
Good.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, why don't you intro first? We'll get
Let me tell you who Glenda Taylor is. Glenda is a friend of mine from years ago, one of the brightest women that I know. She has a number of books out. She is creative. I'm going to let her talk about it, but we're going to be talking about a number of creative things. We're going to be talking about the order of visualization and visualization, how you can change yourself. And so, Glenda, you are, how many books do you have?
Eight books. It's actually, there are eight books which have been released, and there are two that are in the process of being released.
So, I was going to say, we might as well go on with the interview now. We were just having in the middle of a general topic. discussion, see if you wanted to get in on it, but we can roll into the interview talking about the books and things like that. But did you want to make any comments on some of the topics we were just talking about?
Well, I enjoyed the State of the Union address last night, and I look forward to the one next year, and I also look forward to what is on President Obama's agenda and what the surprises that he has. Because
yeah.
President Obama always has a surprise that no one expects.
Okay. All right. So tell us a little bit about the books, and you guys wanted to talk about.
Go ahead, Glenn. Tell us about your books. Remember General Musso's Drum. Start with that, okay?
Okay. Well, it's just basically about how the autobiographies of African-American female entertainers and how they use their autobiographies to record American history.
But that's not the only thing, Glenda. I remember that book. Now, you talked specifically about Sissy Houston, right? And Whoopi Goldberg, right? And you recorded them, you know, really, really brilliant women. So this is a book about these women who you consider griots. Am I reading that right?
Yes, you're reading that right.
Yeah.
And
okay.
both of them, Sissy Houston has two autobiographical books. The first one, which he did about 10 or 15 years ago, and one that's recent, I think it was put out the early part of last year. And both of them, she does an excellent job of recording history and being thorough about her family's history, which started in the South and it came to New Jersey. But what you learn is not just about her family's history, but you learn about the history of African Americans in, you know, the United States.
Yeah.
And we've got a real long history indeed, and a lot of great there's a lot of great subjects out of there for women, women inspirational subjects to be interviewed. I just think of some of the modern day ones that come to mind. One of the guests of the president at the State of the Union address was, I forget the woman's name, she was a part of the civil rights movement, a woman that's about 103 years old, and she was out there in Selma, the March on Selma. She was on the front line with a lot of the men.
Is that the one that Oprah Winfrey played? I'm not sure if that's the same person, but I know in the movie Selma, Oprah Winfrey played the role of someone who is now like about 102 years old.
Yeah, no, I think that was Lorraine Toussaint who actually played that character. Oprah plays of a woman who was trying to register to vote, but Lorraine Toussaint, the actress Lorraine Toussaint from the show Orange and the New Black,
mm-hmm.
as one of many other shows, plays that character. I forget the woman's name, too. I'm trying to recollect who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Wayne, would mm-hmm. you be there?
Yeah, you know, you're jogging my memory. Good evening, Ms. Taylor. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine, just fine. But I've forgotten the woman that Oprah Winfrey portrayed just recently passed while the film was in production, but I forgot her name. But she was there during that whole period. And, you know, I have to commend you for, you know, at least bringing to light some of the sheroes of our world, you know, the black world that really need to be highlighted. You know, I as you were talking, I was thinking of the late Dr. Betty Shabazz, who both Kay and I worked with at Inner City back in the day, closely
mm-hmm.
with. And I remember some of the troubles that she went through as a young black woman, even trying to get after her husband died, even just trying to get a mortgage for a home to bring her daughters to live in was extremely difficult. And to see what has gone on with black women today, that, you know, basically it's been a brilliant transformation and things of that sort. So I think, you know, you're right about documenting and promoting the stories of people who have done well.
Yeah,
Yes. Is it also, what I found out, I've heard the story about the young lady who was sat down on the bus before Rosa Parks, and she's still alive, and she lives in the Bronx, New York. And her last name, I think, is Colvin, C-O-L-V-I-N, Claudette.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she's still alive.
I'd like to get her name again.
I think it's Claudette, and the last name is C-O-L-V-I-N. And they said that she always remained active, and that it was she and about three or four other women basically pursued it and took it to the Supreme Court. And that had a lot to do with, you know, the boycott and, you know, everything else that was going on in the justice system. And that she speaks about it, and she does not mind, you know, that she basically nobody knows her name or that she took a back seat to Rosa Parks. And that Rosa Parks was, you know, the chosen one for them to focus on. But she's still alive, and she lives in the Bronx.
I'm in the Bronx, and I'm not far from her. I would love to find her.
Yeah,
okay.
That would be great, because I would love to hear her speak and to, you know her stories. And she's not very old. I think I remember her being, like, about 72 years old when I was reading about it.
Oh.
You know,
so
she's...
Wayne, if you can take that on and try to find that lady, you know, we'd like to have her on the show.
Right, I think that would be great. I mean, it would be great if we could just get her on camera, too, you know. I will try to see if I could find her, Kay. And, I know you did one of the last interviews with Rosa Parks, you know, some years ago. So, you know, this would be excellent.
Yeah, and it's on video.
And she speaks publicly about it. I think still she still does. So that would really be great.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you about.
I will look into it.
Let me tell you about the interview that I did with Rosa Parks. It was done in front of a mural that Don Miller, an artist from Montclair, New Jersey, had painted about the civil rights movement. And it started with Martin Luther King's college days, and it went right straight through to the bus boycott. And so fortunately, Don Miller let me use his mural as a backdrop for the interview that I did with Rosa Parks. And so I still have that interview. The mural that Don Miller was painting at that time is now hanging in the Martin Luther King Library in Washington, D.C., as a matter of fact, those people who go to Washington should make sure that they see this, because it is a history lesson. And every single educator listening should have to take their children to the Martin Luther King Library in Washington, D.C. If you stand out there on the sidewalk, you can actually see the mural. That's how big it is. So, and I'm really glad that I can talk to
the Martin Luther King Library.
Martin Luther King Library in Washington, D.C. So people need to be aware of that. But, you know, one thing I want to go through, a couple of other things that the president said that were really, it was about the economy. And it's also about, you know, protection of the, our the different people that we are, you know, involved with, you know, around the world. And, you know, he wants to form these relationships with them. And I don't understand what the Republicans are doing, because they do everything against Obama, because Obama is Obama, because he's a black president, okay? He's not going anywhere until his period is up, so they might as well get used to it. Also, Rand Paul, is that his name? You know?
Yeah.
Rand Paul, the congressman, you know, with him siding, you know, with Obama. You know, he was actually agreeing with some of the things that, you know, the president was saying last night. So I was really surprised about that.
Oh, you're saying in his reply, Grandpa, okay.
He was sitting there nodding his head in agreement, and then he's been on a lot of the talk shows in the morning, so we were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Glenda, more about
yes.
your books. I want to say just one thing about Daryl Musso's Drum. You also talked very extensively about Whoopi Goldberg. Okay?
Yes.
Do you remember? You really respected
Whoopi? Well, Whoopi is I think she's a great comedian, and I think she's extremely intelligent. And she basically talked about the impact of having someone like Diane Carroll and being able to see her on television and what that meant to her. Because, you know, back when she was born, because Whoopi was born like in March of 1955, so she was basically watching television in the 60s, and you didn't see too many people of color on TV, you know, playing a major role, and she talked about that, and she says how she sees us and the roles that she chose to play, because even some people criticized her for the type of roles that she played in the past, and she said that she feels, you know, like basically she did roles like they did in The Help, and she felt that that was a respected profession in which, you know, it was a period in which there were limitations and that they had dignity, and like The Butler, like that movie, he had dignity and he did what he did during that time, and she felt she was honoring them by playing those type of roles, even though she was criticized for it back in the day.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I was not even aware of that, but, you know, I could understand, you know, how one would want to bring some light to it in a respectful manner because, you know, I know with my own family's involvement in this country, sometimes those were the only jobs you can get just
exactly.
to have the, you know, a foot in the door to do something,
exactly.
you know?
That's what I loved about the movie, The Butler. I think for anyone, and I loved one of my favorite scenes is when Oprah, like, slapped her son, and she said, you're not going to disrespect him because you wouldn't be where you are if he didn't do what he did. And I think it was kind of symbolic for all of us that you can't look at people who went through so much during a period and really critique them in ways in which they really shouldn't be criticized. You know, because things have changed tremendously when you think in the last 50 years. And if it were not for them, and I think the movie Selma is an example of it, none of us would be where we are. As a matter of fact, I heard that President Obama did a screening this weekend of the film Selma in the White House.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Oprah Winfrey, basically, I don't know if you remember her Legends Ball, but she saluted the living heroes like John Lewis, Quincy Jones, you know, the people from back in the day, Dick Gregory, all of them who were activists. And she did a celebration, I'm sure it'll repeat again, and it was on last Sunday. And she contacted Michelle Obama and asked him would he, you know, make a statement. And he came in through satellite and basically said thank you, because if it were not for you, I would not be able to sit in the seat. I just thought that I was just very, it gave me goosebumps.
Yeah.
Because he respected them, and it was John Lewis. And John Lewis in the movie, you see how badly he was beaten. And he's somebody, I mean, I'm sure he's been interviewed a lot, but you may want to interview him just to talk about his experiences during that time, because the movie really showed.
Yeah, Congressman Payne is going to have John Lewis actually at his keynote speaker this year at his Black Tie Gala. So that would really be a special thing. He is truly one of the legends, one of the legends of the civil rights movement. And
John Lewis Merle Evans. Merle Evans is another one.
I had the opportunity to work with him and to be in his company. Often when I go visit Congressman Payne in Washington and I'm able to be in the company of John Lewis, it is a remarkable thing to be with this giant of history, of our American history, but who was a living, breathing man, a humble man, and who was given inspiration to so many, and as you said, almost gave his life on that day. He is remarkable, and one of our, you know, up there with Dr. King, in the movement in terms of what he's done for our country. So he is
That's
a great individual, certainly.
Yeah,
I also didn't realize that it was 25,000 people who walked across that bridge either. I didn't realize there were so many people who actually, you know, marched for the Selma, you know, marched.
You know, Glenda and Mark, Wayne, this is why, you know, history, historic pieces of historic pieces are so important to the movie industry, and they're so more important to our community, because then we can actually see what the truth is, especially those films that are paid for and put on, that's paid for by black money, okay? So we have to really encourage people to do more films. And Eric, you can speak to that.
Things a little bit wrong. We need to get more films to be paid by black, for to be paid for with black money. That's a little bit of a misnomer. And have blacks involved out there trying to push it. And certainly with Oprah, individually, Oprah, she's able to get the money. But we need to, part of the problem in Hollywood is that we haven't had the money traditionally to do these great films. To do films like a Selma, like The Butler.
Yeah.
And historical pieces that highlight black people. So just now we're moving into that realm, and maybe more blacks that have money on that Oprah-type level and multimillionaires will, and I'm sure some are, looking into that and finding ways that we could take advantage of that.
I would hope so. In fact, you know, the reason why I say that is because of the fact that where are the black films? Where are the black actors and actresses? They weren't even mentioned in the Academy Awards.
I was just going to get to that, Kay. I agree, and that's one of the problems with Hollywood. And I know, Eric, you could certainly speak to that. That, you know, I just think it's a sad commentary that you have all this wealth of talent out there showcased, and yet the acknowledgement is not coming from where it should be. And I believe there's a black woman who basically runs the Oscar organization now, and it must be an extremely difficult position for her to be in, knowing that, you know, these little subtle forms of racism still exist.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, just to be a little bit more accurate, but I don't know if she runs it to say that she determines, you know, when you say somebody runs something, it kind of suggests that they call the shots. And the Academy is a voting body. So the people vote. I don't know how the films get nominated. I know once they get nominated by a committee, I would assume, and then there's a voting body that votes on the films. If you saw in the press coverage, people, they talked about that the majority of Academy members are majority percentage. They're around in their 60s, 63. I think the majority percentage, certainly around 74% of our white. And the majority percentage are men. So that explains why there might not be a large amount of diversity within that. And also, too, you know, we got to remember, too, just because a movie is about the civil rights movement, the weight of the movie and the weight of the subject matter doesn't automatically mean it should be nominated for an Oscar. But traditionally, in Hollywood standards, we know that when movies come out with that type of weight, that historical significance, they usually kind of are a serious movie, drama, i.e. serious Oscar contender.
Sure.
So I don't know if maybe enough Academy members or enough people had the opportunity to see the movie, but, you know, the Golden Globes is certainly a more liberal organization than the Oscars, and they didn't really give, I mean, the only award that Selma got was Best Song, so... I think it probably came
out. Well, you know,
Go ahead, Glenda.
One of the things, and I don't know who said it, but there was someone on Al Sharpton's show, and I don't know how true this is or accurate it is, but they said that one of the problems with Selma, in addition to everything that you mentioned, you know, as far as the Academy being primarily, you know, white males, older white males. They said one of the problems is with that movie that Paramount did not, and apparently they have to send out the movies to the voting members, and it's pretty expensive to be a member of the Academy also. But they said that Paramount did not send out Selma in time for the people to receive it, to really properly vote on it, or the way they should have been able to, you know, to be one of the selections. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that sounds like some more subtle sabotage.
That's entirely possible. That's how they have to get the, you know, the members have to get copies of these movies. So the studio and the producing body of the film, they're the ones that make these copies available.
So they make, if they want to push their films, these particular films to be voted on, you know, they make sure the people get the copy. So that might be entirely, have a lot of merit to it.
And to be perfectly honest, when you like really, when you think about the film, the content, the power of it, and the brilliance of the director, because she really did a superb job of handling some very sensitive issues in a very intelligent way. But when you see that film, it's such a comparison to what's still going on with the United States that I think that there's some people who really would not like to see that film be the film of the year, because it's powerful and it basically says we the people have the power to make the changes. That's what that film says. And I don't think everybody, you know, out there would necessarily want people to, you know, pay attention to it in that type of way or think about
I wouldn't put it past them that there are some that probably don't want those messages to go out. But what I think is even probably more likely to be the real reason is that it's not as much intentional as it is they don't place a premium on what's important to us, you know? That's not important to them. So,
and I understand, you know, to a certain extent why that's the case. I mean, the deal is that, you know, what we may appreciate and have the utmost reverence for, perhaps larger society feels that, you know, we've gone past through this. You know, some of them lived through it. You mentioned, you know, many of the Academy members are in their 60s. You know, I'm in my early 60s. I know exactly what that's about. I lived through that whole civil rights period. So to me, there should be some understanding and some you know, reflection or acknowledgement on that level, just to say that, you know, that bias aspect is not there anymore. So, again, I don't know enough about the process. Come again?
Why should it be any different than America on the whole? I mean, you were saying it should get some, but, I mean, it's Hollywood. It's a reflection of America. Just now, you know, the majority of products they still produce is predominantly for white audiences and white storylines. So, but that's a reflection of America. I mean, America, the majority of programs and things that are available for white people. So, you know, Hollywood is a reflection of America.
But Mark, you have to say, not to cut you off, but you have to admit that it has changed. I mean, I'm a little older than you are. I remember seeing Amos and Andy on TV, and that was what I had to identify with when I was a little child in this country, very small, not knowing what the American culture was all about because I was being brainwashed by my parents about, oh, we're not going to be here very long, and that issue. But the bottom line is, when I look at Scandal, and I can't think of the actress name on the other show, Getting Away with Murder, or whatever you call it, you know, it's like things are changing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, nobody's saying they're not changing, but, you know, they only change as much as they have to, right? I mean,
but the only thing that I'd like to say, and I think that we have to come to terms with in relationship to that movie, and that's why I think the director did such a brilliant job, is that the glory of the civil rights movement is everything that what the Constitution represents, and no matter what people still feel and how they still behave. When you think about what they went through and the brutality 50 years ago, it doesn't happen that way, the way it did then, like you said. And that's an American accomplishment, and it's not a black or white accomplishment. And what the movie shows is how it was Martin Luther King badgering and working with Lyndon Johnson, and it was the white people who got on that bridge with the black people. And even though we were the leaders of that movement, it was all of us that made it happen. And that's what was really, and, you know, and white people died too, and they were killed, and they used, you know, they called them white N-word, and all of that was a part of that. And what people must face is, I guess it's pretty hard to think that those are your ancestors who were so brutal and so ugly, but at the same time, if it were not for the others, we would not have been able to accomplish it, because, you know, Martin Luther King could not have done it without Malcolm X, which the movie shows, and he definitely couldn't have done it without Lyndon Johnson, because it was up to George Wallace. You know, it just wouldn't have happened.
The effect of the actors on some of the black films. For instance, Eric, you were in Malcolm, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us how that affected you being in that movie and being among.
Let's, rather than personalize it. Because I want to talk about the broader nature of this film and the ramifications you guys are talking about. There's a lot of interesting, the next great area of material to be covered that's really fertile in Hollywood in terms of literature and history is really Black American history, because those are those great stories that people look for, that you say that win Oscars and do things like that. Those are the type of stories that have that kind of heft and that depth, there's so many stories about African Americans throughout history.
Like Butler? Yeah.
But if you look at what Hollywood has done, Hollywood has kind of refused to pay attention to that fertile ground of potential literature to make stories out of. I mean, there's a few like the Butlers, the Mothers, but those are primarily pushed, you get a huge star like Oprah or something behind it to put that weight and that push behind. But it seems like were they stories about white people, those stories would have already been told, because those stories are told about white people. There are those type of stories about white people, but they're already told, and they're told time and time again. So that's the funny thing, it's always like regurgitating Elizabethan times, regurgitating Queen so-and-so, 8 million stories about Queen Anne, this and that. But the fertile ground for stories and juicy literature to come from is the experience of the slaves in America and how they came through, a people developing and overcoming all odds. That's what makes drama. The lead character, the hero, the heroine, overcoming that great obstacle, whether it be in their life, spiritual, or whatever. And there's no greater ground for that than the stories of African Americans throughout the history of America. And those stories have yet to be told. The other stories have been told, the European Americans experienced, but those stories haven't been told. And were it not for the fact that they were of the Africans, they would have already been told. If there were European stories that they could find like that, they would tell them. But since they can't, they keep telling their stories, the same ones over and over again. So that's what I say when I mean, I'm not surprised that they don't value what's important to us, the heft of our stories, because if they did, they would have told a lot more, so many more before now.
If you go back to The Color Purple, that was a very important story. It really was history. And to have Whoopi Goldberg play that important role in that picture, that said a whole lot, okay? And it also sets the scene for the viciousness, of white supremacy. Comment?
I'm curious, as you mentioned all this, Kay and Eric, I was just interested also, if anyone has recently seen, there's been a lot of play about Kevin Costner's new movie with the interracial, I guess there's an interracial dynamic there. And I haven't seen it yet, but, there was some segment on the news tonight about how he's going to take it to Ferguson, how he wants to take it to Missouri to basically, take advantage, not so much, I guess take advantage would not be the appropriate thing to say, but basically, allow the viewing public to see, the dynamics of interracial love and that sort of thing. And I know he played a very pivotal role in Whitney Houston's career, some years ago when they did that movie together. I was just wondering, juxtaposing that with what you said earlier, Eric, I was just curious, if that's what you're talking about also in terms of enlightening the American populace, viewing populace about our culture.
Well, I don't. Only thing I know about that movie is that apparently the daughter is his or whatever. I got the little daughter. I think that that's a step, but still, and yet, they always seem to make it through the prism of their eyes. Obviously Kevin Costner can't help that he's white, but it's yet another storyline of the white father with the black daughter. What a, you know what I mean? So it's told
our lead character, we're experiencing these emotions in the story through the eyes of this white guy, right, who has a black daughter. He's kind of, in a way, the most immediate identification we can make with him in real life is Bill de Blasio. So automatically his character is going to get points, right, positive points. So whatever, I don't know what the storyline continues to be, but I don't know if that is the right thing to take to Ferguson to say we all should, you know, I'm the white father of a black daughter. I don't know if that's exactly, I don't know. I don't know what the movie's about. So I don't know what happens.
And neither do I. I just found it strange that they would bring that up, you know.
Yeah, so, and that's more like, to me, and if I know, maybe the movie does address that, but if the movie doesn't address it, it just deals with him dealing with having his black daughter and trying to overcome whatever little personal stuff that he has to overcome and little personal racism he overcomes, then no, it's going to be your self-indulgent type of thing, and you want to come and take advantage of this, you know, this hot topic that you feel. But, I mean, you know, one thing I noticed about Kevin Costner, though, he does seem like the type of star, even when in his heyday, when he was really hot, to view the world in a diverse capacity. You know, his movie Dances with Wolves was a Western, but it wasn't a traditional Western in terms of the way it portrayed Native Americans. So that told me that he viewed the world a little bit different than the average dude in his position, the white dude, or go along with America's, you know, basic art. Our publicity history, you know?
I'd like to also mention, you know, if there was a documentary on Karen Belafonte, and I forget the name of it, but it showed how he was very involved in the civil rights movement, which he was, we all know that. And I can't think of the name of that movie yet, and if I think about it, I will bring it up on another show, because that's worthy of, you know, a discussion. But listen, we only have about 19 seconds left. Wow, 90 seconds left. All right, I want to say to Glenda. Glenda, I was going to talk to you about your creativeness. Yeah, remember you sent me this book a long time ago, Your Invisible Power, by Jeffrey.
Yes, I just want to say one thing. I just want to say one thing. I don't really know too much about it, but I just read that Susan DePass and Steven Spielberg are working on a movie about Dr. King.
About Dr. King?
Yes.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
But we got to wrap up because we got so involved in this conversation. We forgot to monitor how much time we have left. So I want to thank you, Glenda Taylor, once again for joining us. As always, whatever you drop in, join in our discussion. We're going to have you back to talk about your specific project. Wayne Gilman, thanks for, just being the co-host, being the news legend that you are. And
thank you for allowing me to participate.
Oh, couldn't do it without you. I'm Eric Payne, the son, Citizen Payne.
And I'm Kate Thompson, the mother of the son, Citizen Payne.
This has been Kate Thompson, Kate Thompson Live Show. The Kate Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can catch us every Wednesday at 8 p.m. 8 to 9 p.m. or archived on the show. Go to KTopsonBlogTalkRadio.com / KTopsonLive. Later.